Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call hosted by Tracy Capstick, Dean Moss and Andrew Malcolm. My name is Joanne and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain open and interactive, so you are free to make any comments or feedback during today's session. However, you are advised that to avoid background disturbance, please use your mute or secrecy button. If you require operator assistance at any time, please key star and zero on your telephone and an operator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded, and I would like to hand over to Tracy, Dean and Andrew. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Wessex Route. Glad everybody could join. This week is going to be slightly different, hence the invite to all section managers and line managers to phone in. So I'm at Clapham and I've got Dean Moss, who is the Ivan for the last couple of weeks.
I am.
With me and Andy Malcolm. I'm in a room of people from Clapham as well. Now, a couple of things will be different. After I've done a quick introduction, I want to open all the lines and everybody tell me who has phoned in so we can keep a note. That's the first thing. The second thing, the subject matter is triggered by near misses with trains. And this is not a safety hour where we are going to talk at you. This is about inviting comment from section managers and line managers about what they think and what we think we need to do, if anything. So let's have an intelligent conversation about our biggest risk. So I'll ask Andy and Dean if they want to say anything like this.
I think we get started. We can introduce everybody in this room. We've got a room full of people, and then we need to start on. We need to be quite careful because that could happen to be a free for all. But I'm sure we're coping.
Right. Okay. So we'll introduce everybody in this room, and then Joanne, you'll need to open up the lines and manage people calling in and announcing who they are. So go.
Andy Swire, Farrell Testing and Coaching SM.
Nick Toomey, Section Supervisor of Wimbledon. Mark Brereton, Clapham, TSM.
Wally
Turner,
TSM.
Mark Village,
Clapham.
Joanne Davis,
Workplace
Park. Charlie Murphy, Wimbledon. Wimbledon. No, Bridget,
Tony
Matthews.
Danny
Mandel,
Source Coordinator.
I'm
Kendall
Tanning,
System.
Brian Day, SGV, Clapham.
Richard Gosling, well known Grinding Manager, Clapham.
Jack Roberts, IMSM, Clapham.
Steve Edwards, Workforce Health Safety Environmental Advisor.
Andy Malcolm, Infrastructure Maintenance Delivery Manager, Clapham.
Right, okay, so that's who we have in this room. Joanne, can you now open up and try and control...
Please be advised to place your line on mute unless you're speaking into the call. Thank you.
Morning, can I see?
No, that's fine. It's just to see the area.
Mike King and Trevor Stevens.
No, it's the platform 1-2-3 of the station. There was a track and no.
James Rundle and James Wright.
Eve Griddle.
Sean Waller, former session two.
Steve Corrin, Glyn Lewis.
Peter Clark, SNT, plus 10 others.
Shahid.
Ian Gedd, Walking DU, Workforce Safety Advisor.
Mark Johnson, Jan Finn, Darren Baker, Eric Gonzana, Base Stoke S&T.
Base in Stoke Kingway, Rob Conn, Dave Thompson, Chris Hines, and Carl Woodmore is in the room.
Good sound, Paul is Wesson.
Claire Day from Works Delivery.
Dan McLean, Works Delivery.
Steve Angus, Salisbury P. Way.
Nick Miles, Wake CRE.
Randy Mabadogo, SNT, Incidental Mission.
At Woking, you've got Anne Brown, Charlie Croft, Christine Green, Reg Marika, Anthony Bennett, Steve Williams, and Brian Butcher.
And yourself.
And myself, obviously.
Chris Brown from Avon.
Yeah, oh my God.
Graham Owen, Kevin Steer, Jackie Stevens, Colin Allen, and Roy Cooper at Guildford.
Got Martin Smirk and 13 others at Eastleigh.
Alice Drop and the Wick with Neil, Tim, Danny, Sean, Evan, Richard.
We've got Abe Gavin and Tony Newton down at Liphook.
Great Lowry and John Inge, East US Delivery.
Gary Munn, Eastleigh DMP.
Yeah.
Jimmy Murray, Supervisor Salter S&T.
Right, okay, so that was very impressive. Well done, Mr. Coombs and Mr. Corn. Very precise. We think we have representatives from almost every section. Now, we're going to have to be very careful controlling the background noise and muting when we talk or not, as the case may be. Now, this is an audience participation call. And the reason I say this is, after a near miss yesterday, since I've come back on the 1st of April, that's four, and I have never known four happen in a short period of time. So I'm looking across the room quite scared. Having said that, the cunning plan that we had in place was to do the big briefing, which we did, to get the section managers out doing PGSIs on COSIs and SOUTH checks. Not wasting your time poking about in an office. Deal with your high risk. To look at red and green zone working to see if it's good. Something to stay on you. We could put more into green zone, and I am aware of the additional risk associated with that. Every section will have a quick assurance done by Mr. Dore on the quality of the sound. So that's the only things that I can think of to come up with. Now, I've asked Aidy Lavin to say a couple of words today because he's in a position he thought he would never be in this morning. And Aidy, are you there?
I'm here, Tracy, yeah.
Right, okay. So listen up, people, because I want Aidy to explain how he feels what happened yesterday. And this could happen to any one of you section managers. So go, Aidy, and introduce yourself and tell the world what happened.
Okay, Aidy Lavin, for those that don't know me, I'm the section manager for the Guildford Off-Track, soon to be the inner manager. And yesterday morning, while we were undertaking the conference call, a message had come out regarding a very serious near miss with staff working at Little, for which at the time, I didn't think it would be my staff. And then as it transpired after a couple more minutes, I realised there's no other staff down there and it has to be my staff. So I read the description from the log and obviously phone up my staff and then stand them down. And I was very shocked at that time, not thinking that they would work unsafe or not think that it would be that close given that the driver had reported 5 seconds or less. So on leaving the office and attending down to site, I was very nervous on the approach as well, and obviously speaking to the team and going through with the team, not only did the coach not think that there was a near miss, he blatantly disregarded his own COS briefing, to which I was a bit more stunned. And I know him personally, know his wife and his children, and they explained to him that in different circumstances, I didn't want to knock his door and tell his wife and his kids that obviously their husband and his kids' dad had had an accident. So I ended up pretty much quite distraught and a bit nervous. With back with them, obviously stood them all down. And obviously then we requested MediScreen, to which we then went back to Haven. I spoke to Trevor Stevens and himself a number of times, and then obviously made my way back to Haven. Conducted part of the level one briefing, and then went on from there. I didn't really finish work until gone 8 o'clock last night by the time I finished the paperwork. I never slept last night. I was quite open to tell people that I never slept. I still find it quite disturbing. I'm down on site with Tony Newton, the TME, at the moment. We've gone for a go-look seeing, we've walked through, and quickly we've identified a couple of quick wins, and obviously that's where we are at the moment. I've taken, Paul's not on track at the moment. We've reviewed his costs, which we've partially suspended at the moment, but we've kept him back in the office, obviously, for a state of mind, just to make sure that, in case there were something going through his head at the time, because we only had lookout protection for one road and not the adjacent road to which he walked straight into. So I've taken him back at the moment with a view that we'll assess the situation after, once the investigation takes a bit more way forward. Right.
And Tracy, it's Tony Newton here, track maintenance engineer. I thought I'd just share a few things we've learned this morning after doing a PGSI on the team on site. We repositioned the lookout after reassessing the sighting distance. And looking at the work itself, identified that actually, through restaging the work, to carry out a lot more of it under either fence or separated green zone. Having conversations with the team out on site, we identify that behaviour and culture potentially, not to preempt the investment, but we're contributing back towards the
You're breaking, so can you say the last three sentences again, please?
Yeah, sorry, so we carried out another PSI on site, not on location. Relocated the lookout to be in a more confident position of safety and achieve the correct sighting, and actually identified that through replanning the work and have done so today, we can carry out more of it under green zone, under fence or separated, rather than lookout protection rid zone. And without preempting the investigation, but just having conversations on site, culture, behaviours possibly were contributing factors towards the incident happening. And also we had counted from the exactly same positions where the team were and where the incident happened, counting a train on the down direction. It only had 5 seconds from coming around the curve before it got to the location we were at. So it was most certainly a miss. And I think a heightened awareness on site now, and genuinely checking things like sight and distance and encouraging those to speak up, is the only way that I can see approaching this to try and change this culture.
Right, okay, thank you. Any questions for AD or Tony?
Tracy, it's Peter. Yes. We was having a little chat after our conference this morning, and one of the things is are all our causes that are going out there testing their SO system at work before commencing. It's a question to everyone, really, because I think a lot of the time that people aren't testing their SO system at work, you know, maybe complacency sets in.
Interestingly enough, and when I've looked at these things before, it's generally the first train through is the near miss if you've not tested it beforehand, and it's too late when you're in the forefoot. You kind of do need to test it before the train comes through. Right, so, any other questions for AD and Tony?
Oh, Hi, Chris, it's Tony again. Just to respond to Pete's query or issue he raised, I totally agree. I think we need to actively look out for range finders and check in finders and confirming they're in a position based. Not directly linked to this incident, but it is indicative of the culture and, as Pete said, potential complacency once we're actually doing the work. That's definitely something that we can get across the team.
Okay. Right, anybody else has any questions or suggestions at this point? Because...
I know it's part of it.
Right, you're...
Sorry, I know it's part of the investigation.
Yeah.
Do we know why the guy actually went
yeah.
to the other line? We did extract
it. Right, so I've got a question here. Do we know why he went over onto the down line?
Yeah, what he was doing... He's had a moment, well, I don't want to go into it, but what he's done is he's cut some vegetation back. The flatbed that we used was absolutely full up, so what he's done, without thinking apparently, behind the group, he's walked across into the down road and just dumped the vegetation over there.
Right, okay, yeah, thank you, Ed.
Sorry, just to build on that, I guess the key thing here is there were enough resources on site and the plan would have allowed the cost to redeploy the lookout to allow that to be done safely. And without going more into the behavioural causes for the investigation, there's the potential for hesitancy to go and move the stuff across. But like I said, there may be many other questions about what the investigation is all about.
At this juncture, I'd kind of like to move away from the incident yesterday. Because an investigation does have to occur, but you collectively own the people. You know probably more about putting people to work than the rest of the organisation put together. You are the ones that send them out. You are the ones that supply your sites, do all those good things. Now, we have got a rising trend, and I am concerned, but I don't have the answer. So what I need from you, effectively, is a sensible debate and or suggestions about what else we can realistically do. Who is that? Morning, Carl. Yeah, go there.
Okay, this won't be a popular or a PC thing to say, but I think there's a feeling that the rigorous paperwork is really a bit of a waste of time. The guys feel they can look after themselves and think that they're safe. And I just don't think that they're off with undertaking of it. And once upon a time, if you step out of line like this and not claim this incident, but any incident like this, where a cos put the lives of his group in danger, he'd be sacked. I think that's what we need.
What, more sacking? So more consequences.
Alright. Thank you very much. They still got killed when we used the second, so I'm not sure that actually works, but it's everyone's reaction really.
Who was that saying that doesn't work? Hello?
It's on mute.
Oh. It's just how mute and doesn't help. Right, okay. Any other perspectives on this?
Hey, this is Graham Guildford.
Yeah.
I think we need to get away from the cost is also working, to be honest, because I think his mind gets taken away with what they're doing and not actually what he's there for.
Okay.
It means more manpower, but it means you've got someone controlling the site safely then. Completely.
Right. Okay, so... One man devoted to site safety. Okay?
Tracy, it's Jim Rundle. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I sort of agree with that mentality. I think, you know, you've got a cop who's in charge of safety, and if they're currently working as well, then their mind's taken off the game. You know, they're there to control the site. They're there to make sure everybody's safe. And it sounds like this individual was trying to do the right thing and get the job done and put stuff in a safe place. But, you know, missed the main reason why it was there, which was for the safety of the group and itself. If I dedicate someone purely to the safety side of things and that's all that they do, then I think they focus then on being safe and making sure everybody else is safe, and that is their sole job.
Right, so safety is a job in itself. Right, I'm going to say, I've got some nodding heads over here in Clapham. So, what do you think? Shout so they can hear you.
I agree. I think if someone's out there, they should be in charge of safety and not in charge of, and not doing the work.
What about safe work? I was going to say that. Isn't that a safe
word
leader?
That was a safe word leader, effectively, yeah. Right, okay. Safe word leader
is the right principle.
Yeah.
Money with everything else that was going with it.
So, yeah.
Just wasn't ready with
it. Yeah, okay. So, any other observations?
It's Mark.
Yeah.
I think this is an inherent problem, and I think it's down to reduction in manpower we've got on the coal face. The more pressure these guys have got, the more maintenance, the more faulting, and the continual pressure that these poor guys are under. And I fully support what that gentleman just said. I can't remember who it was. That the cost should be out of the work week totally. He should be just doing safety.
Right, okay. Anybody else have any views? Acquiescence is not acceptable.
I think the bank has been increased with small numbers as well.
Tracy Roscon speaking. Hey, you're up. Right, was this team responding to a close call or not? Was he responding to a close call?
No.
The impact that those calls could have distress and strain on the section managers and the courses and the individuals because of the increase in close calls. That's a good point. I don't know who's chuckling. Right. One of the things I was pondering over this is, what is the relationship between section manager and his blokes? Do we think that section managers are affecting the guys particularly? Is there anything dynamic about that relationship? Sorry, carry on, somebody.
Yeah, it's Mark again.
Yeah.
You're saying the relationship between the section manager and his teams.
Yeah.
I think I've got quite a good relationship, and that was borne out on Friday. The team leader went up to Reading. He didn't have the required sighting distance, and he had no hesitation in coming to me, so there was he didn't think there could be any consequence of not doing the maintenance or anything else. And this is the email I forwarded you this morning.
Yeah.
He refused to do the maintenance. Because the position had changed from the last time we did that SELPS. That SELPS is now under review, that we will now do that work on a night.
And that's perfect, Mark. That's what we should be doing. We need
I totally agree. But what Tracy asked was, it's the relationship between the section manager and their team. Now, my team had no aversion to coming to tell me and Jan that SELPS wasn't wrong for that work. But some team leaders and some coaches won't do that.
Actually, and there's a couple of reasons for that. If sometimes you get coaches that want to help their section manager out because he's got a lot to do, rather than not saying something out of fear, I think it's tied to that coin. Right, okay.
Tracy, it's Dave at Yeovil.
Yeah.
The question is, with your COS standing down and not doing any, is that your team leader who's meant to be leading the job?
Yeah.
And with such a small workforce as we have, that is a big issue. because sometimes your COS is your team leader. Agreed. It makes he takes on a lot. But if you're asking a COS stand, and that's the team leader, who takes on the work?
Yeah, and that is a problem if your COS isn't working, which is why they've always worked,
you, because
they're dual purpose.
You could have a leading trackman take on the COS duties, which I agree is in his scope of work and his directive to do it, but then he's saying, I've got more risk of being the COS than the team leader doing the work. It's a dodgy one to say, you know, split the COS and the team leader. I don't know, it's a difficult one.
I see. Steve Angus at Salisbury. Hello, phone fight with Beth, but we're not allowed to take line fight with Beth anymore. Surely that would be an option, having line fight with Beth for live blockages, and Fingerman being a bit more helpful.
Right, so more greens than working, effectively?
Pretty much, yeah.
So it's Andy Malcolm from Clapham. So that's a really good point, and just to touch on the previous point as well. From Basingstoke Essentry. So we need to consider, and it's really key. And the fundamentals of the way the station for work set up is a hierarchical organisation. In that we're supposed to start at the top. So we're supposed to start at the top in terms of green zone and work our way down.
Yeah.
And adopting that approach, we should be eliminating red zone working as much as possible through that process. But also there needs to be, and I think Tracy's point about the relationship can be interpreted a number of ways. It's all about communication and a culture. In that there's a two way dialogue in terms of are we planning the work in the right place, in the right way possible, i.e. green zone or red zone, and also where issues developed, is the work being stopped and it's being fed back that actually it's no longer practical in this location to do it red zone. A because the resource we've got, or B because of other factors such as noise, vegetation, etc. So that dialogue at kind of ground level is really good. But what should also protect that is the fact that we're applying the hierarchy in that we're working our way down from green zone, not immediately going straight to red zone because it appears more convenient. And on the previous point again around obviously line side requests. And all that sort of stuff. Whilst that creates quite a degree of operational risk in terms of it not being pre-planned, we need to look at how's the system we've currently got in terms of green zone applications.
Yeah.
Does that provide a barrier that forces us to work around in that we default to red zone rather than going through? Well, actually, we can go green zone.
Yeah.
But we can't due to panel workload or the deadline for the Gazax doesn't work for certain lines, all that sort of stuff. So there's a need for us to open that dialogue up, I feel.
Right, okay. So the debating point then is, are we defaulting to red rather than going through the pain of going through green and downwards? Do we seriously need to look at that inside each section?
Tracy, it's Mark again.
Yeah.
I think we are defaulting to red, and I think there's a very good reason why we're defaulting to red on a lot of stuff, and it is because we are not getting the support from the ops. So if my guys want to do separated green to do maintenance during the day, they will be refused. So I'll
no, just step in here, Mr. Person. Steve Corey, president, used to be an ops man. Now within the safety section. Obviously, Mark, thanks a lot for that. We've done a lot of relationship building with the teams down at Basingstoke when I was there. But you've obviously got a transferred risk within the signalling centre, and Malcolm brought that up with regards to workload and what have you. It's a bit like the COS looking after a group of his men. What the signaller's doing is looking after several train services and crossing requests and all kinds of things like that. So there's a happy medium that we need to try and approach, and plan is always the best way forward, but we've just got to consider the workload as well with regards to the signal and duty. And of course, not every area is suitable for doing that kind of activity. The areas between Hazelmere and Petersfield, they're all auto sections,
train services every 20 minutes or so. So therefore, the line blockages won't necessarily work. You won't get the time between trains to do what you need to do. So, you know, there's lots of discussion all around to really reach that happy medium, I think.
But Steve, do
John, do you hear? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go.
Oh, good. Must have been that before, and I've heard it 6 times. This work, I believe, was for watch delivery for some of my fencing, and which obviously some of that work bank's going to maintenance to deliver. My expectation would have been that would have been done in a green zone, because of the distance from the track, and perhaps depending on the access arrangements, it might be necessary for red zone to get to site. But once you're on site, then I would have expected it to be green zone. The other thing I'm thinking of is this is the third time we've had a near miss on the WPH1s, and I am really unconvinced that the WPH1s have been properly assessed for the red zone prohibited areas. And I really do think that we probably need another review of the WPH1.
Oh, hadn't thought of that one.
Hi, sorry, Tony Newton here again. Just going on the last couple of comments. Unfortunately, I knew and was involved in the management and the follow-up from an individual over in Sussex who was hit by a train at 90 miles an hour. We went through the delivery unit, quite a painful process of reassessing all our sites for position of safety and site distance, and did prohibit multiple locations, in fact one entire ELR for red zone working. After the dust has settled and we changed the method of working, we did actually move to patrolling an entire section by Ego 4 shotters, and actually the whole process is a lot safer and more convenient for a lot of planning reasons. I definitely think there are some sites that we need to look at. We need to manage that in a controlled manner, because we've got to look at the implication of having to red zone and get the support in place for the sections to deliver the work rather than just ban it. But also in terms of managing the hierarchy, I think what's unforgivable is repeat line-side requests at a location. But if we have identified on site and the work is urgent, we should be supporting section managers and delivering a safe system work to the teams. Just want to know what everyone's thoughts were on assessing position of safety and site distance on site.
Tracy, can I add something there for John, please, mate? Okay, so it wasn't an issue with the working red zone for fixing the fence, because where they were, they're that far back. Obviously, we've just evaluated that we could do it in a safer area. The issue wasn't that. The issue was the cost moved from a position of safety and a briefing that he had undertook for the upline only with about a mile's worth of sighting distance, and disobeyed his own briefing and crossed into the down road. That's where the issue comes, which was what seems like a cultural thing, because he didn't think. That's where the issue was. It wasn't to do with the nature of the job, because where we are at the moment, and I'm near with Tony, there is enough room to actually undertake this in a different way, of course, but the lookout protection gives them a bit more protection to obviously make sure that they can get the material to and from site as they're installing it, and then they can still do it safely. So we've set up four green and red zone working.
That clarifies pretty much how I'd expected it happen, that you would have part of the protection for getting to and from site, and you would have separate protection on site, which would be green zone, which I think we both are signing off the same hemisphere there.
Yeah. So the issue wasn't to do with that, John. The issue was that the cost actually moved from the upload directly into the download and into the down set.
Yeah,
it's not for individual,
okay. Yeah, and not the planning, yeah. My wider concern was still that, I haven't been out there myself, I don't let my survey teams now go and survey during the day on a WPH1, because I haven't been out there quite recently, not the last year, quite often. I'm really unconvinced when I'm out there that it's safe with lookouts in a number of areas, and I just think with three serious near misses now that really need to be looking at some of these areas again, because every single one of the occasions a train has come around that end, as I understand it.
It's Tony Newton here. I think everything we're talking about here, and I've used a bit of management speak now, but when we talk about safety culture, there are several hygiene factors out there, and one thing I think I became aware of with the relation to the incident I spoke about before is there were lots and lots of cases where, as a management team and as a route, we were sitting with known risk, and as you say, reassessing sites for whether it is safe to conduct work there. We were sitting with sites that we knew we were sending people out that weren't 100% safe. And I think without doing those regular assessments of sighting distance and physical safety and other cultural issues, such as having the time to go out and conduct in-depth BGSIs and check for people, we are unconsciously giving the impression or not reinforcing the message of choosing the right method and stopping to pick up all your work. So it just comes down to the fact is all the things that we've addressed on site, all the things that came up without going into specifics of the prelim investigation yesterday, were all signs of the wrong culture within that team and the inability to step up and challenge unsafe practice. So we have to go and reassess multiple routes and send a message out to teams that we shouldn't be asking, or we should be proactively seeking out potential risks, might be a good way to start on the culture. But also looking at section manager and supervisor workload, that actually having the time to safely go out and conduct PGSIs is a top priority.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, couldn't agree more.
And something that we need to address tomorrow in the team building, Andy, just saying I'll take offline anyway, is how Novo potentially affects some of that, and having a maybe a structured conversation on whether we think that increasing certain teams might put that at risk.
That was really good, actually. I didn't realise you were from Sussex. Can I just point out, though, that for every section manager that sat there thinking, that's okay, I got this covered, we're really good, I haven't got to worry, my plan is spot on, I know me men, and I'm looking at things properly, can I just point out to every one of those section managers is, in my opinion, AD Lavin is a good section manager. He looks after his blokes and he would never have put at risk. So there is an element of disbelief, it couldn't happen to me in AD, and every section manager I know that has that position has always been in a state of shock because they thought it couldn't happen to them and they were looking after their people. I don't want anybody to think that you're being picked upon because you're not. Trying to get to is a place where we have a sensible understanding of where we're in and moving forward because everybody is human and nobody is perfect.
So, Charles, to come over again, the other thing that strikes me is obviously these are only the ones that we know about. It's obviously happening a lot. For these to come true, and not only that, but people know that it's happening and it's not being reported. It's an obvious thing to say, but I guess that's a reality.
I would like to be in a place where people self-police. So, you know, if you've got one cause out with another cause and they do something inadvertently daft, you know, Mr. A would say to Mr. B, best we don't do that because it's not the safest thing to do. Or what were you thinking, mate? Or addressing things without doing it in a negative, you're going to lose your job way, should we say. A bit of human understanding and peer support would be bloody handy at this moment in time. Okay.
Sorry, Tracy, just one more thing is thinking about it. Straight after the incident over in Sussex, one thing I was suddenly aware of that was heightened was IME, Iron Dumbs, even Roof Directors and Associated. Their presence out on site carrying out PGSIs and genuinely challenging groups on safe systems of work was elevated and continued to do so for quite a while. And that definitely had a positive impact on
group on various groups sort of sensitivity to risk. They just weren't willing to tolerate anymore because they felt like there was more of a presence out in sight.
I have to tell you, I've got some stunning leaders of men that are out there all the time, and some that need a bit of a tickle to go out. And actually, the less you know about the infrastructure, the better, because you're excused asking all the girly questions, which I do quite often. So, PGSIs by the supervisors are on whether your guys are doing the right thing, and then the line managers above those are invaluable, and the executives should be doing safety conversations, and some are good and some are not so good at that.
I suppose the key point there is with an IMD, an IME, or someone from the routine.
Yeah.
Is that in the event that you're doing a safety conversation, when it needs to, where that safety conversation has its most value is out on site, because that's where you're going to put stuff up. So a safety conversation in a mess room is one thing, but actually in terms of sort of value added benefit, you want to be making sure those on site. Likewise, what we've done with section managers and supervisors in terms of not counting ones that aren't trackside.
Yeah.
So if someone does a vehicle, or someone does occupation, that's great and it's all good stuff. But actually, we really ought to be measuring the ones that we don't, purely the ones that are out on track, because they're the ones where you're going to get that dialogue, or where you're going to find things, and you can help affect the culture. Doing a vehicle check in isolation or a combination check doesn't add or improve to the culture within the delivery unit.
No, and actually you need to tackle your high risk groups, and your red zone working are always going to be your high risk groups. Interestingly enough. Who's been very quiet? Who can I pick on? I've got others from Yeovil. Bournemouth. Who's down in Bournemouth?
John Lawler's down in Bournemouth from Bournemouth S&T.
Okay, John Lawler, what's your thoughts on this subject?
My thoughts were certainly after the three that were shown with the forward-facing camera was that we wouldn't see this kind of event so often. Obviously that was wrong. But it's like I talked to my guys about, you know, valuing their lives and the lives of their fellow workers, but I think there is a culture that people feel that they're safe, it won't happen to them. So my parting remark after the briefing was, well, if you don't value your life, then value your job, because the forward-facing camera will catch you out. And that's something we don't see from the Fair Culture Panel, is any consequence of any of these incidents. And I think if we saw consequences, briefed it to the guys, whether good or bad, with some kind of explanation, then that would give them more idea of how the investigation process works and might open their eyes to some more things.
John.
No, John, that's a really good point, and it does, and it works both ways as well. So in Fair Culture, if we need to have that same respect for employees' lives, don't we? And in the event that we're making decisions as a business that we're saying actually we think this is acceptable, we're only aiding to that culture that people think it will never happen to them. So it is almost on both sides. So we need to make sure that we're doing the level ones, we're involving the union reps, and we're going through Fair Culture. And likewise, you shouldn't be scared of publishing the consequences, because we regularly publish on the period cascade and say, oh, this was a reckless contravention, this was a slip lapse, this was practicing processes. But what did we actually do? What was the next step? Did that go for disciplinary? Was someone retrained? Was someone, change of role, etc.? We never publish that, do we? We only purely show whether it was a reckless contravention. Well, reckless contravention could mean no consequences. It could mean dismissal. We're not very good at getting that across, are we?
No, and actually, that's probably me, because I don't think the word discipline has any place in a safety cascade, which is probably wrong. Right, okay, so, is there another view to that? Because that bit scares me, that what it looks like a hard line, you make an error, you potentially pay quite high consequences. Is there any other opinion on that?
Tony in here again. I think we're saying is right. We've got to show that it's a fair culture. Very conscious of the fact that, and as I just said to the team here today, but the first priority before we start, because it is two separate processes, the first priority is to learn the lesson and put controls in place to change it, and it looks like so far everything seems to be about culture. And if it is identified that someone's acted recklessly or maliciously, that we then take that as a separate issue and manage to discipline that person. I think consequence in that respect would be good to report, but also to report it in Safety Cascade as two separate work streams.
Right, okay. Anybody else on anything related to this at all?
Yes.
Ooh!
I was
Steve Edwards, for Safety Advisor Clapham.
So I was at Wimbledon 10 years ago when one of our colleagues was hit by a train. You do not know how it affects everybody until it happens. That wasn't a few people affected, it was a depot. It is a very, very, very unpleasant place to be in. A very nice environment for a... You're looking at your colleagues and all of you to a man is in a constant state of shock. So forget fair culture, life-saving rules and everything else. This is about people. This is about the effect it has just on families. Not something that you ever want to go through, believe me. Because our depot went through it, and it is not something that I would wish on anybody.
Thanks for sharing that. Really powerful. If anyone has got any other burning suggestions or stuff, they can email me and you, Tracy and Andy.
Yeah.
With you with Red Zone working, we've got the ORR coming, and they're looking at our Red Zone working, so we need to be addressing that definitely. It's a good discussion. I think this was really useful. Did everyone think it was useful? Everyone here is nodding, that's all right.
All interested, anyway.
Okay. Unless anyone else has got something burning they want to say, I'm going to wrap that up.
Hey.
Yeah.
So have we got anything in mitigation sort of going forward? So I know we spoke about the pod just doing safety duties. Is that a good thing to do, looking at the minute, until we come up with a solution?
One of the debates we're
going
to have to have, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to have that debate, Jim. We're going to have to talk about that. I don't want to do any knee-jerk reaction to something.
I think there are three or four points that we need probably to take away from this. One is the relationship between COS and working. One is a review of our red zone prohibited areas. What is not red zone prohibited? Mm. One is our working from the green down hierarchy, whether we're adept at that. So those were the big three for me that we really do need to do something with. What about you two? Anything?
I think the role of the COS is a really interesting one in terms of red zone where there's a need. Especially in a mobile work site where there's a need for the work to kind of be continually assessed. And I know that's been an area of concern for a while.
Yeah.
So I think we need to do, but just so that we don't just end up trying somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I think we need to have a considered discussion of what we
And so we've got our section managers on as well, so just to reiterate that all our guys need to work safe and just be conscious of what you're doing, make sure you're happy with what you're doing. If you're not happy, then speak up. No one's going to get disciplined for that.
Right, so anybody else before we close this out? So those are the primary three areas that we need to take away and ponder and come back with, actually. If there is a fourth out there that...
Danny Ed.
Ah, Mr. Ed, how are you?
Yeah, I've been looking in, and I'm thinking we'll ask you guys a conversation tomorrow, because I'm looking, you know, Richard has been in different circumstances on that one, but it is where I am, and then the one that we had near Mrs. Claire by now. One of the things I really need to talk about is South PAC, planning to know how to produce a South PAC, and when you look at training for that South PAC to be created, As a line manager and a responsible line manager under 019, what training have we had to help produce that pack? I'm taking over Nova, I'm taking over Patton and Favour Street. I know nothing about those lines pretty much, yet I'm expected as a responsible manager to find out the work with little knowledge of that area.
And Jamie, David, I can only agree with that. When, as we're as far west as you can go, planners are planning work right down the bottom of our area. Have they got any idea what we've got? Completely different railway to what a lot of other people got.
So, we've got another sales planner helping us this week, for the work this week. Facts are wrong. Okay, I've looked at them, they were wrong. So, the different planners doing the South PAC is still not correct. I feel there's a big training issue, not the planning, the training issue, right from the very start. You know, when does he see a PAC? One, because when he's training, he sees a PAC is when he goes out on the site. Always goes out, so to say. He doesn't see other training. As a lot of my manager, best to put my guys into a green zone at my house. What training have I had to show what signals I need to be correct? With some of these junctions, you've got signals all over the place with all directions. It's very difficult. And I actually believe that I've touched a lot of my guys, and again, I was very devastated when it happened. The power position stuff, you know, they get to your show, it's not what I'm doing. And one of the safety conversations I had with one of my teams was not to the cars, it's to the lookout. I'll say to them, I'm a grand of a junction, and I said to you, Simon, can you point out the signals you think you would need to require to block this line? And they couldn't do it. Right, they may not have done part of their job to look out, but they couldn't do it, and sometimes even the causes struggle with it. There's a lot of training issues here, from the very start, and I'll talk to you today, very much in depth about it.
Right.
Hello, it's Charlie. I would have to agree with Jamie. My son has just finished her course, and they don't even see SALP at all. You're not shown the SALP system at all, and they are chucked back into the office and just expected to know exactly what they're doing. Unless they've got someone that is competent using that system, they're out on their own. Luckily, I've been able to sit and help my planner, but I don't think there's always that option. I think they need to possibly review the course and actually use the SALP system. It's all very well and good showing you maps and what signals look like and stuff, but until you actually try and use it in the system, none of it makes sense.
Well, I'm getting some nodding heads up here on that as well. So, what I'm hearing is training for planners on SALP. Yeah, is not as good as it could be if it exists at all. Training responsible managers on what at in the sites. Understanding your area, whether you're a player or a manager. Does patient by the cause, a shift in advance, not help with that though?
the COS have not seen, let's go back to training there, Newly COS does not see a sound pack to he goes back to the depot. But he doesn't even know what he's going to look at.
Sorry, Jamie, say that slowly, you're broke.
The COS, as he starts a COS, someone's going to COS training course.
Yeah.
They're not showing a sound pack to the come back to the depot, what they have to do.
Right, because...
And if there's a sound system on the call, then great, but courses I've got now, even they're struggling sometimes with the stuff that's in it, this ain't alone with us. Not alone.
Right, okay.
It's a training issue. We need to get the training right.
Right. I think I've got that, and we'll probably have another discussion about it tomorrow, Jamie. And I do think there is some work to be done on what a good sound pack is and what that information means. I didn't realise there wasn't any training on our sound system. But, planning is one aspect of it, isn't it? But it is that on-site behaviour that is the worry as well. So I've got all that. Anything else?
Perfect, thank you.
What's the girl's name? Just snap it out.
Right. Thank you very much for everybody who phoned in. That was quite... And I hope you did benefit from listening to some of your peers. On this issue. If you don't have an opinion on it, then you need to have a bit of a think, because these are your people, and you are the people that put everybody to work. But we've taken some stuff away. Joanne, are you there?
I'm here.
Right, okay, so you're on standby at the moment. So, have we got any last pearls of wisdom from this room or any other room?
Hey Steve, it's Johnny
Owen
down at Eastleigh.
Who's that?
Johnny Owen down at Eastleigh.
Yes, John.
I really think we're overthinking on this, because at the end of the day, it's complacency. And it's the guy's complacency. You can have any safe system you want, but it only takes one person to get to the place to walk away. It wasn't the plan that was wrong yesterday, it was the fact that somebody got complacent, forgot where he was, and that's what you need to drum into them. We need to work out how to stop that complacency.
I think you are right. If the sax is right and the system of work is right and all the resources are right and all the rest of it, then the last thing to fall down is potential. Complacency or odd thought process from the man on site. So you're not work out what the golden bullet is that would stop somebody just not thinking, then I would be a happy woman.
Yeah.
Complacency plays a part, but what we don't know is the fix for it, and that's what I'm after.
Well, Tracy, it goes back to what I was saying, and I totally agree with John. I've been here hundreds of times and all the rest of it. But what I am going to be briefing my staff, every time they go out there, whether they've been out there 1,000 times or not, test your safe system of work. Get everyone in that mindset. So every time they go out there, test your safe system of work before you start work. That's what I'm going to be doing with my team anyway.
That was probably the first thing that was said on this call, and actually I quite like that to be the last thing as well. So test your safe system of work is the thing we need to take away today, because that's all we can change today. So thank you very much, gentlemen, and any other thoughts, email us.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining and have a very good day. Thank you.